and welcome back to another episode of Critical Success. I'm James D'Amato, your game master. Last week, we started our series on how to prepare to run your very first game, and we're going to continue that this week. Before we get started, I'd like to remind everyone that this is the companion podcast to One Shot, which airs every Thursday. We just finished recording our Halloween episode, which is Scooby-Doo Run in Call of Cthulhu. We ran with special guest Nick Lang from Team StarKid. It's definitely worth checking out. I want to apologize to everyone for not releasing this episode sooner. I promised it last Thursday. However, I just moved and I've been settling into my new apartment. You might hear a little bit of an echo in the background. That's because I haven't thoroughly soundproofed this area yet. If you haven't listened to last week's episode yet, I encourage you to check it out before listening to this one. I introduced a lot of new terms there, and I wouldn't want anybody to be left behind. With all that said, let's dive right in. The only bit of concrete advice that I gave last session was to build the thesis statement of your game first. Basically, if you have one element that everything's leading up to, that needs to be solidly built. If it's a big puzzle, you need to know every element of that puzzle. If it's a big encounter, you need to fully flesh out what that encounter is supposed to look like, both the environment and the monster they're fighting. If something can't go wrong in a session, you have to know everything you can about it to try and prevent that. I'm going to call that step one to building any game. That is something that you do solely for yourself as a DM. It helps ground you. If you have a strong sense of where the story needs to go, then it doesn't matter how lost you are because it will be easy to guide it back on that track. Well, okay, maybe not easy, but easier, and that's important. Now that you're taken care of, you have to take a look at the party. Every one of your players needs to be able to walk away from your table knowing that they did at least one thing to contribute to the session. Both game-wise and story-wise, your session has to satisfy every player at that table at least once. Think about it this way. If your party was dividing up treasure from a dragon and they didn't give you any, you'd feel pretty pissed because you were left out of your accomplishment. It's the same thing as if one of your buddies leaves the table muttering about how he didn't get to do anything. The best way to make sure you push everybody's buttons is to thoroughly know your party. Step two of creating any game is taking a hard look at the information the players give you beforehand. It protects you, and it protects them. This is a time where you should take the system you're using into account. Most of my listeners play Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder, and those are tactical, combat-based systems primarily. In D&D, players can realistically expect their characters to see combat at least once a session. Nearly every piece of information on a D&D character sheet is relevant in combat. So it is a really, really good idea to make sure you understand how each character operates in combat. That doesn't mean you need to know the finicky bullshit details of everyone's build. It does mean you need to understand generally what they do. Is your fighter a mounted knight who uses a lance, or is he a dungeon-crashing lion totem barbarian? The answer to that question is extremely important because it affects one of the most important aspects of your game. Generally speaking, every character has at least one thing that they're really, really good at. For instance, dungeon-crashing lion totem barbarian fighters are really, really good at doling out metric shit tons of damage to single targets. That's something you need to both cater to and be wary of when you're building your session. So long as it's pretty sure you're legal, you don't need to sweat the little details of what players can do. But you do need to know if a character has the ability to deal 50 damage in the first round. That's going to affect how you design that final encounter. In addition to background and the character sheet itself, I recommend you have the player send over what they see as their character's role in the party. I wasn't wild about 4th edition. One of the things they did do is own up to the fact that D&D is a primarily combat-oriented system, and they brought in MMO terms to refer to their basic character archetypes. You knew that rogues and warlocks were likely to deal a bunch of damage all at once because they were strikers, and strikers are supposed to deal a bunch of damage at one time. Every character has at least one thing that they're really, really good at in combat. Take note of that and provide opportunities for it. That sort of knowledge can help you manipulate your combats to make them more dramatic and interesting. Putting an appealing target out there for the charged-based melee combatant can help you keep your important NPCs alive for the duration of the fight. It also helps the person playing your fighter feel good because they got to do the one thing they're super awesome at. Your players don't need to get into specifics, because most of the time they like to surprise you with the cool thing they can do. They do need to tell you, I cast a big spell that does a ton of damage. I swing a big sword and it does a ton of damage. I'm really good with the DCs on my poisons. Understanding the one big thing all of your players are good at is also important because it will help you manipulate their choices. D&D is about combat, and combat is a hammer. Since every player has a hammer, all of their problems start to look like nails. If you know what specific brand of hammer they're using, you'll know how to signal to them when it is and is not appropriate to use their cool thing. When I ran Feng Shui, Tommy Euphrates was really, really good at driving. Since Feng Shui is modeled after Kung Fu movies, most of the fighting takes place hand to hand. So I had to throw in the car chase in order to make Tommy's character choice valid.
Okay, well, I throw the e-brake on and do one of those 180 turns, slam it on the brakes, and I slam the gas to go back for Lala.
Perfect, yeah. You burn some rubber, and the car rides up right along past you.
As I'm coming back, I want to do another 180 turn, but with the broken door, I want to time it so that we scoop her up with the car as we're
beautiful.
Turning around.
Think of that moment as John's abstract loot for the session. He helped beat the bad guys, but he also got the opportunity to show off what his character does best. Role-playing is all about the party getting to do cool shit. Those massive piles of imaginary gold are totally meaningless. What's important is how the characters got them. And if everybody feel like they contributed meaningfully to that process, they can walk away from your table totally happy. This also protects you, because it allows you to mentally prepare yourself for your players acting extraordinarily competently. Almost everybody who's been playing for a while has seen somebody one-shot an NPC at least once. That shit can be detrimental if you aren't prepared for that possibility. As a GM, it is really easy to get caught up in the idea that player characters are meant to act in service to your story. However, players, more often than not, are acting in the interest of themselves and their own personal stories. If you're surprised by player behavior, you're probably looking at it from the wrong perspective. A classic example of this is the very first Feng Shui game I ever played in. My good friend had built his campaign around Fu Manchu. We were listening to the radio dramas at the time, and everybody thought they were pretty hilarious. There's a point in the Fu Manchu radio drama where the heroes finally manage to corner Fu Manchu in his office. He slowly turns around and says in a sinister voice, "Put down your guns, gentlemen. They are useless." That is an awesome and ridiculous moment in the sort of beautiful pulp that Feng Shui is supposed to recreate. However, my character believed in two things: America and guns. There is no possible way that anybody could convince him that they weren't the absolute answer to all of his problems. So when Zach called back to that beautiful radio drama moment in his own game, I answered it by shooting Fu Manchu 40 times in the face. However, Zach is a clever game master, and he understood my character and how he would most likely behave in that situation. If I were a character in a Fu Manchu story, I would have stopped and listened to his monologue. But I was playing a hero with a hair trigger and more than a few issues with authority. So I shot him before he could get a word in edgewise. However, Zach knew my character, and he was prepared for me to do that. What my character actually shot was a cleverly designed system of mirrors. They merely projected an image of the villain who was safely hid away in the winding walls of his inner sanctum. Not only that, but the back wall of the office was actually painted glass, which held behind it a terrifying wall of water. As soon as our hero's bullets struck that wall, the glass shattered, unleashing the titanic force of thousands upon thousands of gallons of water on our heroes. That is the sort of moment that is fully satisfying for both me and my GM. Zach knew that my character was good with a gun, and he also knew that my character believed in guns. When confronted with a problem where I was specifically told not to use guns, he knew I would fire in response. And he used that to his advantage to create an awesome trap. I still got to act fully in my character, and Zach was rewarded in seeing that his trap was sprung perfectly. I recommend making a list of each character. Write what they're best at in combat, what they're best at out of combat, and what they're after in the story. You should include at least one of these elements in every game. Your first session should have at least one hook to appeal to everyone. Later on in the campaign, you can devote entire sessions to satisfying single characters. However, in that first game, it is critical that you let every player know that you have their back, and they won't be ignored. And if you're playing D&D or Pathfinder or something similar, it's also really important for that first combat to have at least one thing for everyone to do. If your mage can cast Fireball, there should probably be a group of smaller opponents. For your rogue, you'll need something to sneak attack. For your fighter, who can use Cleave, you'll need at least two targets that aren't tempting for the wizard. And for your cleric, you'll need something they can rain Holy Wrath down on. Ultimately, going after the right target is the player's responsibility. But you can help them out by providing for them situations where their powers would be pretty apparently useful. Of course, that advice just pertains to encounters. If you're playing with a puzzle-based system like Call of Cthulhu, you'll want to provide your players with puzzles that fit their abilities. Call of Cthulhu is actually a really great system to learn about player priorities because the skills are based on percentages. When a player puts a percentage point into a skill, he or she is literally telling you how much they care about that particular action. If one of your players is a scientist with 70% in chemistry, they are probably going to want to solve their problems with chemistry, and they are waiting for the moment that you are going to ask them for a chemistry role. Every time you cater to what a player is good at, they feel like they made the right choices, and that means they're having a successful game. Players can fail, and they generally don't begrudge failure. What they don't take well to is not having the opportunity to succeed. Once you know where the game is going and what your players are good at, you're finally ready to actually start creating the full session. Now, I had you establish your centerpiece because that's going to fall into one of the three categories. Your big climactic scene could be a role-playing thing, like a big, intense interrogation. It could be a puzzle, like a life-or-death game of Hound and Hares. Or if you're playing a D&D-based game, it's probably going to be a big fight. For our purposes, we'll say we're playing D&D, and the final scene is a big fight. Since my fight is my big, exciting draw to the game, I don't want to take away the specialness of it by peppering the rest of the session with lots of tiny, small, uninteresting fights. Even players who truly love combat and are always thinking with their sword can get bogged down if all they do is go into fight after fight after fight. Catering to those other two categories in the other parts of your game helps you take advantage of an old piece of game design wisdom. And that wisdom is differences in scale versus differences in kind. To keep a game interesting, and to make scenes feel distinct from one another, you have two basic options. The first is to change the scale. If fighting a goblin is interesting in one scene, fighting five goblins in the next scene will be more interesting. Changing the scale is the most basic and direct way to approach heightening tension in your game. It is okay to have a tiny encounter in one part of the session that all builds towards a huge climactic boss fight in the final act of the session. However, like I said earlier, fight after fight after fight can get boring, which is why we have differences in kind. A difference in kind is when the challenge of one scene is totally dissimilar to the challenge of another scene. Conversing with an NPC, disarming a trap, or solving a puzzle are all examples of scenes that are different in kind from having a fight. If you're going to end your game with a big fight, I really strongly recommend putting in a small puzzle-solving section and a small role-playing section. That'll help you cater to the players who are interested in more than just combat, and it prevents your game from feeling stagnant. Even if it's just a short conversation with a palace guard, a scene that focuses on roleplay between combats can help your players breathe and get excited for the next fight. This isn't a hard and fast rule. There will definitely be some sessions that lack one of the three elements, but you need at least two to keep the game feeling fresh. Keep in mind, you also have to be upping your scale as the session goes on. Each scene should feel more important than the last. That helps give the players the feeling that they're making progress. So, if your whole game is leading up to that big moment where the party is going to fight a giant, you should start off with a small role-playing session, perhaps an area where your characters are getting called upon by the mayor of the town to go slay the beast. That's followed up with a puzzle session where your party has to either gather information or navigate a deadly dungeon. And of course, it's all topped off by the big fight with the giant. Of course, you don't have to have the fight as your big final piece. It can be your starter. Your party can start off by killing a handful of goblins in the woods. That can move on to a puzzle section, where your party finds an imperial writ on the bodies of one of the goblins, revealing that they had been hired by the evil city councilman to attack passers-by. Once the players have finished gathering their evidence, you can end the game with a huge dramatic role-playing session, where the players expose the evil city councilman and his plan to drive up grain prices by attacking merchants as they leave for other towns, by bringing their evidence to a city meeting. In both scenarios, it feels like the story is going somewhere. The next thing is always more important than the last thing they did. Utilizing each of those three elements will help your story feel fresh and alive. Your story will be going somewhere, and your party will very quickly pick up on that. That'll enhance the experience for them. I recommend keeping an extraordinarily open mind for the lesser parts of your game. You should know things like the information that your party's supposed to get, or the riddle that you're going to ask them, but don't get too attached on how that's going to be delivered to them, because oftentimes parties can make decisions that baffle you and change the setting pretty quickly. If werewolves are roaming the countryside, don't count on the party talking to the interesting NPC you designed specifically to tell them about it. They might completely ignore that person. Just know that something or someone has to tell them. You can pretty much directly thrust that information in front of your party at any point. Likewise, puzzles and small fights might go differently than you expect. The party might not wander into the barn that's making strange noises, so they'll miss that bar guest attack that you had planned for them to randomly encounter. So long as the party doesn't know that they are specifically avoiding something, you can move it anywhere else. Flexibility helps you prepare for disaster, and direction helps you avoid it completely. Once you have all that planned out, you're almost completely ready to run your session. The last thing you need is something that nearly every GM of every experience level forgets to do, and it's what I see people get most flustered with when running games. You should have names for everybody that you know the party is going to encounter, and a small list of names on the side, just in case they run into somebody unexpected. Players crave significance, and they're usually madly scribbling down every name that you throw out there. Your game will run more smoothly if you don't have to think of names on the fly, and your players will have the illusion that everything in the world around them is super important, because you'll have an answer to the question you knew they were going to ask. A list of names is something that's quick and easy to come up with, and adds a lot of value to your game for very little effort put in. And with that, I think we have enough information to draw this session of Critical Success to a close. I hope you guys got some useful information out of this. If you have any questions on how to run your first game, or anything else in role-playing, you can send them to jamesdamatoismagic@gmail.com. There'll be a link to that email address in the comments. Thanks again to Aiden Gutierrez for sending in his question. Aiden is on Twitter at AidenIsNice. Critical Success is a Peaches and Hot Sauce presentation. Peaches and Hot Sauce is a comedy and general podcasting network based in Chicago. If you like this show, there are plenty of other really great shows on our network that I know you'll love, not the least of which is One Shot, the role-playing podcast. All those clips you hear from games on this show are from One Shot. On One Shot, I bring writers, comedians, and actors together to play role-playing games. It is always a ton of fun, and I think it's a great listening experience. One Shot updates every Thursday, and Critical Success updates almost every Monday. And finally, that music you hear swelling up over my voice right now is Be Your Own Pet with Adventure. See you next time, heroes.